America, and all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi. You'll notice one person is missing from that equation. Patrick ate some questionable chicken.
Yep.
And it's pretty much a countdown right now. Figure out which either is going to be his esophagus or his butthole that's going to explode. So he decided to take a break this week.
Yeah. Probably for the best.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is September 7th, 2018. Yes, it is finally September. And we are now 2 months, well, about a day under, 2 months away from the midterms.
Yep. Mm.
That's right. The midterms are November 7th. Mark the date, people.
I saw the worst thing in a store yesterday.
Oh.
It was a Halloween tree.
Uh-huh.
Like a Christmas tree, but for Halloween.
Yeah.
Oh, I can top that.
It wiggles too.
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. Yeah. I can top that though. Okay. So those of you guys may know, I wasn't on the Day Zero update last week because we were doing shit for Labor Day.
Right.
And September started on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Or was it? Saturday. Actually, it started on Saturday. But Sunday, you know, we went up to my grandma's lake house, and, you know, she was with us. And we got a call from, you know, my aunt, who was already up there. She's like, can you get some hot dogs and buns? So we went over and parked and got over to the local Ingles and went to get us some hot dogs and some buns and maybe a couple sandwiches because, you know, I hadn't eaten lunch yet. And guess what I saw as soon as I walked into the friggin' store?
Christmas stuff?
Pumpkin spice.
Oh, God.
Everywhere.
Oh, you must not have been shopping in the past month, man. No, you're about right on all of that coming out.
I'm like, God damn, are we going to see Christmas shit next week?
Yeah, I've seen already? Christmas shit.
Yeah.
That stuff was fast.
I just had the Halloween tree.
Yeah, just see, and I'm kind of torn because we have the perfect Christmas tree for a Halloween tree. We have a skinny black Christmas tree because we're weird. I don't know what else to say. And it screams, yeah, you could totally do a Halloween tree. And I scream, fuck no. I love Halloween, but it's about candy, not about trees.
Yeah.
And would you want to set that up 2 times a year?
No, I don't. Take it down. It's a bitch. It's just more.
Well, you could just be lazy, set it up for Halloween, and then just never take it down until Christmas.
Yeah, we did kind of joke around about doing that. That was actually a conversation.
It's the inside version of having the Christmas tree lights on the house for months.
Yeah, I was just going to say, at least you're not like one of those people who like puts up the Christmas tree and then doesn't take it down till February. But
nah, dude, we get fined here if we do that. We have to take down our decorations within, I think it's, honestly, it's kind of a long period. I think it's like 4 or 6 weeks. Mm. So if we leave the Christmas lights out on the balcony, and I am talking just balcony, it's not like it's a big deal, right? we would seriously get a fine.
Mm.
So, and same with 4th of July stuff. You better have that shit down by Labor Day or you're going to get fined.
Yep. All right. Well, so this week, can we just say that the fucking damn just the damn burst? Because goddamn a lot of shit happened in just a few days.
Some great terrible people got some really bad news, and that's good for everybody.
Yeah. And, we'll get into all that because it's kind of, it takes a little, there's a bit of content to go through. Amongst other things, Nike has decided that their new Just Do It campaign is going to feature a certain controversial quarterback, and it's actually worked out really well for them in spite of the outcry. We also, of course, got some news from Netflix. Law and Order is going to be adding a new series, which is like a monthly occurrence at this point.
Yeah. Don't they have like 42 different shows at this point?
Pretty much, yeah.
I think we'll talk about numbers.
Yeah, because there's a lot of them. The guy who created Law and Order basically compares the Law and Order, like the type of Law and Order series, to like the type of brands of toothpaste people prefer over one or the other, which he says is why that particular franchise is so successful. But also, we got some other stuff. Some unfortunate news for history buffs. Some museums had some awful shit happen to them. Also, a fish shop in Kuwait was trying to make their fish look fresher, and you're gonna fucking laugh at how they tried to pull this off. But we'll be getting to all that and more. But before we get there, as always, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
I'm still playing Shining Force CD as far as that goes. I'm well into book two now, so kind of going through that and enjoying it. Also, every now and then I do a check-in on PS2 emulation with PCSX2. I just go and download the latest build and see how that's going. So I did that, and it's going really good now. I'm able to – usually my go-to games to test whether or not PS2 emulation is getting anywhere is Silphied, The Lost Planet, because for some reason emulators hate that game. So that's working absolutely brilliantly now. Even running it in 4K, it's amazing. So 4K PS2 games, yeah. So that's running really well. Also, Gran Turismo 4 is another one that I look at. That game has had a lot of problems in the past. It's coming along. It's not perfect, but it's a lot more playable than it ever was. I'm going to be digging into that one, see if maybe if I change some of the settings around, I can maybe improve things a little bit. But it's all in the – I'm all up in the emulation right now, as you probably are guessing. Tomorrow, my project I think is going to be after I finish editing the show, I'm going to see if I can get some PS3 gaming going. Just see if I can manage to get that to run properly.
All right.
Biggest problem is how am I going to get my games off of those discs when I have no optical drive plugged in? That may be an issue. So I'll figure that out.
Gotta buy a USB drive.
Yeah, I probably will have to do that. That or a SATA card that I can stick in there.
Is it possible that your library might have an external DVD drive that you can borrow?
No.
Some libraries do that stuff.
Yeah, our library sucks.
Oh, okay.
It's like they have mostly like French books because this is basically a French town, so it's like you don't really see too much in the way of media and stuff like that over here. So it's unfortunate, but oh well.
Yeah.
And well, if all else fails, I could probably also download something. I'm sure I can find ROMs easily enough. Not that I condone piracy, but hey, if you got to do something to get it to work, so. That's pretty much it for me.
All right, Teresa, what about you?
I have been playing Civ 5 quite a bit, along with Civ 6. So, yeah, that's happening.
Teresa, you have a problem.
I do have a problem. I told you guys I lost my scholarship over Civilization, didn't I? Seriously, I did.
I know.
Put them out.
Yeah. Huh?
They keep putting them out, so it's the developer's problem.
Yeah, it's the developer's problem with their pockets jingling all the way to the bank. And the hardware people, because every time they come out with a new game, I get a new computer.
Yeah, you kind of have to, because the new game won't run on old hardware.
Right? But I was trying to do a deity win as Babylon. I thought that I would do it for Civ 5 and get that achievement, because I still have a few to get. But it is not working out for me. I got pretty far in one of them, but I definitely was not going to get the science win, the science victory. And I tried for a commerce victory, and that wasn't going to happen either. So, but I did play Octopath Traveler quite heavily earlier in the week and got through some of Chapter 3 with some of them. And I am picking it back up for the weekend and working on it again. But mostly I was completely binge watching The Good Place. Thank you, Chris. I have been enjoying hell out of that. So We are.
Did you finish the two seasons?
No, we're in season two, pretty deep. Okay. And there is a deal being struck, and that's where we're at.
Okay.
So the deal is going on, and we're gonna see how that goes. This is a great series. Just absolutely loving the hell out of it.
And it, right after where I was at last week, there's a huge twist.
Oh, okay.
And that's where I left off. And I finished the both seasons, and where it sets up for season three is pretty cool.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm loving it. So yeah, that's what I've been doing, and I keep trying to keep myself very busy because I apparently walked through Poison Ivy when we were camping last weekend, and I want to rip off the inside of my ankle. But that won't help me.
No, not really.
No, I need that part of my body later in life.
Yeah.
But and I did a lot of Pokemon Go, but you guys know that I'm always doing that. I'm always out there doing the special whatever. But I don't know if there was something that we were supposed to fulfill worldwide, so we get special Pokemon on I think the 14th or something. I don't know. I guess I should check Silph Road, but I haven't done it yet. I was also in the middle of Bufu, Indiana, and I couldn't do what I needed to do to contribute towards that group catch effort. So, but yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
Okay. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I finished all of The Good Place. It's on Netflix. So yeah, where I am at, a new deal has been agreed to. They go to a new place. I'm not going to say anymore, but yeah, the way they set it up for season three is pretty cool, and you get to see a bit of that at the final episode for season two. So it's a pretty cool another twist of where this goes. But yeah, that is a fun show. And where I'm at, Eleanor gets to curse again. Like, no censorship. So that is great. I've been continuing to watch more Parks and Rec. I am in season 5, and there's a pretty good bit where Ron, I guess, makes a chair that's good enough to win an award. And his ex-wife, Tammy, tries to do some unscrupulous stuff to sort of steal him away from his current girlfriend. And that whole thing goes great. He ends up fighting, or she ends up fighting Leslie Knope in a dumpster. That's some great stuff. But yeah, the main thing I've been doing this week is I got Dragon Quest XI, and I've been playing that a good bit. I think about 6 hours in right now. And that has been really good so far. So yeah, it's the first Dragon Quest on a console since the PS2 with Dragon Quest VIII. And just from my pre-order, I got the outfit for the main character from 8 to play with early on, like the as equipment that is better than the stuff you get early on, but not that much. Like, I'm probably going to be replacing some of it pretty soon, but that also shows up in the cutscenes as well, like your gear, which was pretty cool to have that sort of thing be there in the early cutscenes, and that game just looks fantastic.
Yeah. Let me ask you, does as far as like story is concerned, does it rise above what your typical Dragon Quest story is? Or is it kind of more of the same?
I think it's pretty much more of the same. There's something bad that happens in this kingdom. Like the monsters finally start to destroy stuff. You are the baby that's been born with the markings that say you're going to help save the world. And the monsters don't want that, so they chase, I assume it's his mom, out into the forest, and she finds a way to get him to safety in a basket going down the river. Religious.
Okay, I see where we're getting the ideas from now.
Yeah, and with a note, to sort of denote this to the guy that finds him. And so you are sort of grown up in Cobblestone, a town that's south of this other kingdom, Heliodor. And the game begins with you going to Tor, which is the top of this mountain nearby the town. That's essentially what they have all their kids do once they're of age to become adults. And so he goes with this girl that I assume is a love interest, but at the point where I'm at, they kind of just throw that out, at least right now. And yeah, you're sort of escorting her as the warrior. She does the weird thing that they do within battles where it's like, oh, she's worried for you. She's not actually doing anything. Which I was a little bit disappointed. I kind of wish she was a full-fledged party member, but you also have a dog in the party. And the dog is pretty good. But yeah, the battle system's interesting this time around. So the default settings give you the ability to run around in this circle around the battle. So like a Tails game, but you can't dodge attacks from running around. So it's like just a visual thing, like, oh, this is new. So you can turn that off and use the fixed camera where it just has everybody stationary. Like it normally is, because as far as I've seen, it's not. There's no statistical reason to move around.
Yeah,
it's just like this weird thing. They're like, "Hey, we kind of want to think about new ideas, but we're not willing to go far enough to make them new things, like actually go all the distance."
So it's one of those things where you can like move around all you want, but the attack is going to hit you whether it's going to hit you or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really make sense why it's in there.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's maybe like an ATB style system in there. Because it felt like I got interrupted on some attacks because I took a little longer to put them in. But yeah, I kind of wish they had like an FF10 kind of style like timeline. Say, hey, this is what's going on here. Or Grandia if it's actually like ATB kind of thing. Like there's no like Final Fantasy type things like, hey, this is how much time you have to wait between attacks, that sort of thing. So that's, yeah, there's some things about Dragon Quest XI that feels like they definitely wanted to stay true to some of the old aspects of the series. Like you can only save in churches. There's no like quick save or anything like that.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit disappointing. I would have liked them to maybe modernize some things like that. But one of the things I do like is that you can fuck some shit up. there are certain things around the towns and in houses that just has physics, and you could just run into them and break them, like pumpkins and some pots and such, along with there being like specific pots and barrels that you could break, which you kind of just picks up and throws at the ground. which is just one of my favorite things about Dragon Quest, just running into people's houses and breaking their shit and taking their life savings. and there's a couple characters like, what are you barging into people's houses for? All that sort of stuff. Which I did in the Kingdom of Heliodor and got everything, so I have like way more herbs and such to replenish health than I know what to do with. Which resulted in me dying because I forgot about having so much. Because I went into this big story sequence with like 7 health. And completely forgot about that until I got into a fight and got killed in like 3 hits before I realized what was going on. That's the only time I died. That's just from stupidity. But yeah, I got a second party member. I am heading potentially back to Cobblestone as there's like a bit of a twist where despite being the reincarnation of the Luminary, which is the sort of world savior, they think of you as the darkness incarnate because with you means inevitably a dark one rises up. And so they believe you are also a dark being, I guess. And they jail you. And that's sort of where you meet your second party member who you escape with. And that's kind of where I'm at, just escaping. We kind of went back into Heliodor through the downtown segment of where all the poor people are at. But yeah, the battle system's pretty good. I kind of wish, like, if they were going to try new things, they actually do them.
Yeah.
Instead of just change camera stuff in a weird way. But otherwise, the game itself is pretty good. And I hope it does well enough to get them to kind of stay on console and really rethink certain things about the series, like maybe have more of an open world.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of just linear areas that are pretty big in their own right, but like big in the sense of like Zelda areas in like Twilight Princess or whatever.
Hmm.
Where there's some bigger areas in there, but it's a lot of just linear paths into that it branches off of.
Hmm.
Though you can't, there's no like openness in terms of, you know, revisiting those areas specifically. Like going from Cobblestone up to Heliodor, that area I assume is locked off. Also, one of the funniest things is a mechanic called pet powers. So occasionally in fights, you get pepped up.
Hmm.
Mm.
And because Akira Toriyama art is used for this, it almost kind of looks like Gohan Saiyan a little bit.
Yep.
Maybe more like K.O. Ken if it was blue.
Hmm. Yeah.
But it's also hilarious.
So it's more like Dragon Ball Super.
Yeah. Yeah, but the hairs don't go.
Ah, I gotcha.
Straight up in like the Saiyan way.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like KO Cam where they just kind of keep their state but have like a blue aura around them.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is you keep it if you finish the fight before it ends.
Mm.
So I had a quest sort of after this whole escape sequence that is just do a pet power move. Like if you get both party members, they have like a special move they can do when they're both pepped up. And so I managed to finally do that because I had them both go at the same time, which also there's like a grid sphere style upgrade system. So there are like different focuses in it that you can, every time you level up, you get some skill points to spend on that stuff.
Mm.
And so one of the ones I did for the MC is there was some that's like, you have a 5% better chance of getting pepped.
Mm.
It's like, okay, I'll do that. I'll hopefully make this quest a little bit easier to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like the name of that. That whole mechanic is pet powers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very silly thing in a game that's all about silly names.
Mm-hmm.
Like the cruel.
About a franchise that's all about silly names.
Silly names and puns.
Mm.
Yeah, the horse is pretty cool. You can run into battles with him.
Mm-hmm.
You can also talk to people with him, so you don't have to get off that much. But they have special bells around to call them if you leave them somewhere or lose them. Mm. But yeah, it's a pretty cool game. I look forward to putting some more time into it. Mm. And I definitely will this weekend.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a lot of the good stuff you like from Dragon Quest. I hope it does well enough so we can get a new one that gets a chance to rethink some things.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely feels rooted in the old games in a way that's cool, but also we as North America have not gotten many of those games.
Mm-hmm.
Or in great ways that we can get them.
Mm.
It's like they put out a bunch on like the DS, but those were not in high numbers.
Nope.
So they're pretty expensive to get on the secondary market.
Mm.
Yeah, there's the original stuff on NES if you had an NES then. Super Nintendo didn't really get much of those games, did they?
Well, in Japan they did, but they never came over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Dragon Quest VII was like the first one we got in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a weird game.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was.
The first time that kind of it got
it was
really,
the first one that it was the first disc-based one.
Yeah, yeah, it was the first one that kind of people could really rally around.
Yeah.
Finally,
although, to be honest, compared to the other Dragon Quest games, even by design, it looks kind of, I don't know, bland.
Yeah,
it was kind of jank.
But that's just me, I guess.
But I like the big kind of open world in that.
Mm.
Like exploring that world is just gorgeous for a PS2 game, and this one's gorgeous as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you take Toriyama's artwork and you put it into a 3D space like that, and it's going to look good.
And you give it the power of a modern system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks amazing. I mean,
Blue Dragon, still one of my favorite RPGs of all time, even though not very many people played it.
Yeah. And it's still kind of weird that voice acting in it is still like a Western thing.
Mm-hmm. Because
Japan does not really want that. So that's weird. The British voice acting is great in this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also weird in that sense of like there are a variety of British and UK accents that it's like, how did you people all grow up in the same area and have different accents? Like some don't really have much of a British accent. Some have very heavy ones.
Mm-hmm.
Some have like Scottish accents, and it's like, I'm confused how you all came out of the same town or kingdom.
Hmm.
All right.
Yeah. That's been kind of it. I got Spider-Man installing right now.
All right. Well, as for me, my primary gaming has been Divinity Original Sin 2 on my PS4. Hmm. So I no longer have to, you know, play it in increments with, you know, stuttery graphics on my PC.
Cool thing they did with that on PS4? If you had pre-ordered it, you could start the first chapter like a month early.
Mm-hmm. I didn't pre-order it, yeah. So.
That was like one of the cool things I saw. Like, oh, you can play like a huge chunk of this game.
Yeah, you could. Like,
that's really cool.
And you'd be surprised how much they pack into that first chapter.
Yeah.
Because like, there's a bunch. But yeah, so it's good. It's hard as balls because, you know, it's an old school isometric RPG, so.
Are you playing on like a normal difficulty or one of the user ones?
Huh?
Is there a difficulty?
Oh, yes, there is. There is a difficulty that you can choose.
Okay.
But yes, no matter which one you choose, it's going to be a little bit on the difficult side. Just not as difficult in certain aspects.
Okay.
So basically in Divinity Original Sin 2, you're a person who is in touch, who's able to create magic using what's called the Source. And the problem is that by the time this game has started, when people try to use the Source powers, they inadvertently summon these horrifying abominations from outside of the dimension called Voidwoken. And so the Magisters, who are this sort of vaguely Inquisition type part of the Lucian religious group, have basically decided that they're going to go out, and whenever a Voidwoken is found, they grab them, put them on a ship, and take them over to this place called Fort Joy and stuff them in this ghetto. And then they put you're clothed in rags, and they put a source blocking collar around your neck so that you can't use any magic source powers. And there's like five standard characters, like pre-made characters you can have that all have like their own story and sort of view of the world. Or, you can create your own custom-built character, and all of the five standard characters you can interact with and have them in your party. Hmm. So I ended up choosing the Red Prince, who is this... He's one of the... what they call one of the kin. He's a lizard person. And basically, he walks around with like an air of entitlement because he's originally an aristocrat. But he was declared a traitor, and they, you know, shipped him off to Fort Joy. His way interacting with the world is just, it's funny. Because he, you know, like, he expects to be treated like a noble wherever he goes. And also because his what they called the Ancient Empire, which is where his people originated from, they practice a kind of, they call it slavery, but it's more of like keeping a pet around. So he has his heart set on this one other lizard woman that he's trying to find. But if he finds someone else he likes, he's like, you know, you can always accompany me as my slave. And as you can imagine, most people don't react to that very well. So he gets smacked a lot, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't go very well.
Oh, yeah, and did I mention he's basically an omnisexual sex maniac? He will pretty much hit on anyone he comes across if given the chance. So, yeah, it's a fun game. It's hard as balls, but definitely worth worth playing. I'm understanding why it got such universal acclaim when it originally came out. Got a big sort of wide open world where with just about anything can happen. It's pretty amazing.
And don't they have co-op in this one?
Yep. They got co-op. Other than that, I finished my review for Death's Gambit. It needs to be edited by a certain someone.
Now, I'm mostly done.
You guys should be seeing that on Smashpad pretty soon. Yep. Needless to say, though, I really liked it, but it does have some issues. Other than that, as far as like books that I'm usually reading, I am currently reading one of the Fofford and Gray Mauser books by Fritz Lieber. If you're a fan of like Dungeons and Dragons or like any one of those like types of fantasy stories or something where it's like these two rogues that go into a place and just fuck shit up, basically you have Fofford and the Gray Mauser to thank for that. Because Fritz Lieber basically invented that whole concept because he just got really irritated with the way that the Conan the Barbarian stories were going, because he first started writing them back in the 1930s when, you know, Robert E. Howard was still writing them. So he was like, fuck this, I'm going to do something better. And he came up with Fofford and the Gray Mauser. And because of that and sort of the world that exists, we have a lot of what became early Dungeons and Dragons was heavily inspired by it. Greyhawk. Greyhawk is pretty much like a more generic version of the world that Fofford and the Gray Mauser inhabit. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. It's really good. Definitely recommend it. It's good reading. They still hold up 60+ years later. And they're also really fun. and funny, too. Because unlike, some noble hero or something, these guys are kind of like, a lot of times are kind of out of their league, and so they're constantly looking at each other like, well, are you going to fucking kill him or what? Like, you don't expect me to do it, do you? But anyway, and as for music, those you don't know, Steve Perry put out another song from his new album that's coming out next month, more of a ballad type song, and it's more of a soulful R&B type song, and it's pretty good. I got his album pre-ordered on my iTunes, so, when that comes out, October 3rd, for those who are curious, or is it October 4th, I can't remember, one of those two, that's pretty much it. Anybody got anything else we want to add in before we move on?
No, I'm good.
Yep.
Spider-Man has installed.
All right.
Now I can't play it.
All right. Okay, so I then guess it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And so today I thought it's not, obviously, even though it's not October, we're already seeing Halloween and Christmas shit.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I thought maybe we could do something Halloween related, since I'm not even sure if I'm going to... Whatever. The point is, I said, I might as well go ahead and do this one now, because I'm liable to forget it when Halloween actually does come around. How old were you guys when you did? Was there anyone here who didn't trick or treat when they were younger?
No.
Okay, yeah. So we all went out and did trick or treating when we were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It's actually, and if you've noticed in the last few years, it's virtually disappeared, hasn't it?
It's all like, trunk or treat now, which is lame ass.
Yeah. Because, you know, it used to be back in the day, you know, kids, they get in their costumes with their bags and, you know, they go around the neighborhood knocking on doors going trick or treat and, you know, getting stuff or, you know, maybe throwing toilet paper all over the house. That happens sometimes. Toilet paper, eggs, silly string, stuff like that. It was part of the holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sometime around the late 70s, early 80s, something happened. And all of a sudden, Halloween stopped being kind of fun for everyone. Do you know, guys know what that was?
Oh, yeah. Mm. It was the lies about razor blades.
Well, razor blades and poison.
Yeah. Suddenly and then the Tylenol stuff was about the same time, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually going to talk about that in another factoid sometime soon about the Tylenol thing that she's talking about. Yeah, that's a story for another day, but holy shit. But, yeah, so suddenly people started these stories, these sort of, like, urban legends or whatever, started to go around that there were these unscrupulous evil people that were poisoning, you know, Halloween candy, or, you know, they gave out like candied apples, but they had stuffed them with like razor blades or syringes or something like that. You know, and then suddenly those stories would be like, you know, little Timmy went and he bit into a caramel apple and then he died, you know, that type of story. Mm-hmm. And remember, this was like in the 80s, so we also had the satanic panic and shit going on.
Oh, God, that's right.
Which meant that there was another layer of bullshit on top of it. And eventually it got so bad that even, like, the news media kind of got suckered into it, and they started, like, sharing these bullshit stories and, you know, giving out advisories on, like, what you should do with your kids' Halloween candy when they bring it home, you know. It's actually, in fact, it's because of this shit that a lot of the candy makers started mass producing those individually wrapped name brand candies instead of like just a bag of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, so here's the thing about that. In all of this, when this shit started, all of the stories about somebody, about strangers poisoning Halloween kids' candy, there has never been any confirmed reports of death or injury of being poisoned by Halloween candy from a stranger.
No.
You have to go for someone's actual family to find something like that. And that's what I'm talking about today. Because guess what? There actually is a factual basis for the whole poison and Halloween candy thing. It just wasn't from a stranger.
Hmm.
The gentleman we're talking about is a man by the name of Ronald Clark O'Brien, who became nicknamed the Candy Man, also known as the man who killed Halloween. So, O'Brien was a gentleman who had a family. He had a couple children and a wife, you know, in Pasadena, Texas. One night after Halloween, one of his kids, one of his sons, ate a pixie sticks. You guys know pixie sticks, right?
Yeah, the sugar tubes.
Yeah
sugar tube. Sugar and paper straws. That's basically
insert
what a pixie
that sugar into my mouth.
Yeah. And directly into my veins. Because that shit literally looks like crack cocaine.
It does.
Or like powdered heroin or something. But, so what happened is, his little boy, his little Timmy, yes, his name was actually Timmy, actually Timothy, but he ate one of these pixie sticks, and he complained to his dad. He said, Daddy, this pixie sticks, I don't like it. It tastes kind of bitter. And so his dad went and got him some Kool-Aid to wash it away. Within about an hour, Timmy complained about stomach aches. and he was rushed to the hospital and died en route. So as you can imagine, the fucking nation went bonkers. This was, by the way, this was back in 1974. Did I make that? Did I mention that earlier? This is 1974, and you know, it made national headlines all over the country, because keep in mind, like, the modern sort of Halloween as we think of it, you know, the trick or treat thing, it had only been by this, it was still relatively new around this time, because trick or treating as we know it didn't really start until the like 1940s, 1950s.
Right.
So it was still like kind of a relatively new tradition. And as you can imagine, all the parents were like, fuck. Oh my God, you know, we need to protect the children. Maybe we need to ban Halloween. What are we going to do? They're killing our children. And of course, you know, O'Brien, you know, he went on camera, you know, for the news cameras. He appeared heartbroken. He gave a very emotional testimony at his son's funeral. And, you know, it's just the story of, you know, strangers poisoning children with Halloween candy was sort of put into the mindset. But there was a problem.
Uh-huh.
You see, O'Brien's story didn't quite add up when they started to a few years after this, some people started doing a little digging, and they found some stuff that was strange. You see, when Timmy's autopsy was done, they found that he had had a fatal dose of potassium cyanide in his system. They also checked because they had the original straw, like little package straw that the pixie sticks came in originally. And they examined the straw because, you know, it was evidence, right?
Right.
And they noticed something. You see, the pixie sticks that he had, it had been pre-opened.
Tampered with.
Yes, it had been tampered with. One of the kids had let it be known that before they had gone off to go trick-or-treat, they were on their way to trick-or-treating, but their dad, you know, Mr. O'Brien, he caught him up in the road and he said, oh, wait, kids, before you go, here's some Halloween candy from your mommy and daddy. And they had five pixie sticks, and he gave them. Which is already, like, suspicious as fuck, right?
Yeah.
As this kid was saying, because originally O'Brien was saying, you know, this stranger, somebody gave me this kid. No, he actually had given them this pixie stick. So then he changed his story and he said, well, yeah, but I didn't know that somebody had put poison in them.
Okay.
And where exactly did you get this from?
Yes. And then, of course, there was when, you know, he kept giving excuses to the police. He told them that he said he couldn't remember which house they got the pixie sticks from. The thing was, O'Brien and his neighbor had only taken their children to homes on two streets, because here's the thing, it had been raining that night. So they actually hadn't gone all out of the neighborhood. They'd only stayed like within like a block or two of the actual house, which of course puts the number of suspects down significantly. He actually identified a person's house, but they wouldn't answer the door. Then O'Brien turned around and claimed that he'd visited the home before catching up with a group. He said the owner of the home did not turn on their lights, but cracked the door and handed them the pixie sticks. Claims to have seen the man's arm, which he described as quote-unquote hairy. The guy that was actually at the house, his name was Courtney Melvin. He was an air traffic controller. He worked at the Hobby Airport, but they ended up ruling him out as a suspect because he had, here's the thing, he was working late that night, and he didn't get home until 11 p.m., so 200 people were able to confirm that he, in fact, had been at the airport working when all of this was happening.
That's a pretty significant number of people.
Yeah. And then finally, they did a further bit of investigation, and they finally found out what was actually going on. You see, Ronald O'Brien was $100,000 in debt.
God damn it.
About 10 years before the crime, he had held down about 21 jobs. At the time, he was at one point under suspicion of theft while on the job at Texas State Optical. He was about to get his ass fired. he had defaulted on several bank loans. He'd almost lost their family house. His car had been repossessed by the insurance company. Then they found out that a few months before the death, guess what O'Brien had done?
Life insurance policy.
He had taken out life insurance policies on all of his children. Then he had taken out, another life insurance policy for two of his kids, both of them $10,000 each. Then he took an additional $20,000 about a month before, even though the life insurance agency had raised their objections. Like, guys, when a person takes out, like, multiple life insurance policies on a single person, and this guy is obviously not in good financial standing, there's probably something suspicious going on here.
Yeah, thanks.
Then he had taken out an additional $20,000 policy on each child. Approximately the entire insurance policies altogether totaled about $60,000. Now, his wife, for that matter, had claimed that she had no idea that this is what had happened, that she had no knowledge of the insurance policies. It also turns out that the morning before Tim died, O'Brien had actually called his insurance company to inquire about collecting the policies he had taken out.
Oh, that doesn't sound suspicious at all.
Fucking asshole.
Then they found out that shortly before Halloween 1974, he had visited a chemical supply store in Houston.
Oh, God.
Here's the thing. He had actually specifically asked for potassium cyanide while he was there, but he didn't actually purchase any there because the smallest amount available that he could purchase at a time was about 5 pounds worth.
Yeah, that would be a little bit overkill.
Yeah. So they finally suspected, as you can guess, that it was actually Ronald O'Brien himself who had killed Timothy. They figured he'd lace the candy with poison in an effort to kill his children so that he could collect on their life insurance policies. And he also believes that he gave the other children the candy in an effort to cover it up. For the record, the other kids in the family never actually ate it. So they survived. Now, to this day, no one's ever been able to figure out where he got the poison from. But for all intents and purposes, he was indicted for a count of capital murder, 4 counts of attempted murder. He was arrested on November 5th, 1974. His trial officially began in 1975. One of the testimonies was from a chemist who was acquainted with Brian, testified that in summer 1973, O'Brien had actually contacted him asking about cyanide and how much would be fatal. There was a chemical supply salesman testified that I also had asked him if he could purchase some cyanide. His sister and brother-in-law both testified that on the day of Timothy's funeral, he spoke of using the money, quote, from Timothy's insurance policy to take a long vacation and buy other items.
Yeah.
O'Brien continued to maintain his innocence. His defense mainly drew upon the decades-old urban legend concerning a, quote-unquote, mad poisoner who hands out Halloween candy laced with poison or needles or candy apples with razor blades inserted inside of them.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that went well.
Yeah, these stories have persisted despite the fact that there are no documented instances of strangers poisoning Halloween candy. Before the O'Brien story, there had been, as far as anyone knows, 3 obscure cases of what could be considered poisoning, except that they weren't actually like hidden in any candy. It was just pissed off adults who were like giving out like ant buttons that were labeled as such to trick-or-treaters to tell them to just basically get off their lawn.
Yeah. God.
So in 1975, he was, of course, convicted of capital murder and four counts of attempted murder. The jury took 71 minutes to sentence him to death. His wife filed for a divorce shortly after the sentence. She later remarried, and they adopted her surviving daughter, Elizabeth. Now, O'Brien wasn't actually executed until 1984. He spent about a decade in prison because he kept trying to get clemency, you know, and put it off, and you know. But eventually, even the chaplain couldn't keep him from the electric chair for much longer. So he was originally supposed to be executed in 1980, but he finally was executed in 1984. He maintained his innocence in his final statement. He actually started stating that he felt the death penalty was wrong and immoral. I don't entirely disagree with that, but kind of convenient at this point, isn't it? And, of course, he was finally executed by the state of Texas, and he's buried in Webster, Texas at Forest Park East Cemetery. And because of him, he basically ruined Halloween for everybody in the United States. And he may single-handedly be responsible for the death of trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, every Halloween your local news starts telling you that you need to make sure little Timmy hasn't brought home any, you know, cyanide-laced pixie sticks from a stranger somewhere.
And really, little Timmy needs to avoid the monster at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't a stranger at all. It was literally just—it was his deadbeat dad.
Yeah.
What
an ass.
And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Okay.
Stay tuned when I tell you about that whole Tylenol thing, because that one is—that
is a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole. Who, by the way, actually, you know what? No, I'm going to save that because that's the best ending of it all. but basically, just so you know, just as a sort of a preview, the Tylenol thing we're talking about, that's the reason why if you open like a bottle of medication that's like prepackaged instead of like in a prescription bottle, you'll have like a paper cap and like a cotton ball inside of it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I'll explain all of that next time. But all right, so it is now time for the show proper, and as always, we got to start off with our asshole of the week. So
surprise this week,
yeah, it's exactly who you thought it was going to be.
Probably the top winner of asshole of the week. He should be enshrined in the Hall of Shame.
So. Around, God, was it Thursday? Was it Wednesday or Thursday that this happened? Sometime this week, I'm pretty sure it was Wednesday because there was like a couple days in between then. The New York Times published on their opinion page an op-ed column written by an anonymous writer who claimed to be a high-ranking member of the Trump administration. And basically, they were basically telling us like, look, all the stuff that you've been afraid of, yeah, it's true. Dude's off his rocker, and we're trying to do our best to contain it.
And didn't this person also say, we don't even know why we're here anymore?
Yeah, pretty much. Of course, they also made it clear that they're okay with some of the stuff they've accomplished under the current administration, you know, the tax cuts, you know, the immigration reform, stuff like that. But have also said that, you know, he's amoral. He is crazy that we're basically doing everything we can to contain his worst impulses, which is especially terrifying when you realize what they've actually managed to do so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, and so they're trying to claim that they're part of the resistance. Like, no, you're not.
No. You're an enabler.
Yeah.
And so, as you can expect, everybody went bonkers. Because now they're trying to find out who it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's been, like, a couple of candidates that people have put forward. The one that I've heard the most often is Vice President Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the fact that he used the word lodestar.
Yeah.
Which apparently is a, for the record, lodestar, I mean, it's a known English word, but it's a fairly obscure one.
Indeed.
And people don't use it that often, except for Vice President Pence, who uses it quite often.
Hmm.
And there have been recorded instances of him giving speeches using it, you know, giving testimonies before Congress using it. But then again, it's also possible that whoever wrote it put that in there to throw off the scent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So people have been saying maybe it's John Kelly, who is famously has a very adversarial relationship with the president.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that it could actually be someone like Kellyanne Conway,
mm-hmm.
who is basically trying to do this to sort of cover her ass before everything collapses.
Yeah, but is she a human yet?
No, still a robot.
She looks like, you know what she looks like? She looks like a lizard that's in the process of becoming human.
Well, I was about to say,
like,
you know,
you ever
I
see
haven't...
that TV show Manimal?
Oh, God.
Sort of like in reverse transformation.
She looks like her donor skin is rejecting her.
Yeah. And so, of course, Trump himself went off the freaking rocker, and he has actually come forward saying that he's actually going to try and get the Department of Justice to investigate who this person was.
Uh-huh.
I have a theory. But
who do you think it is?
I think it's the part of Trump that's actually sane.
Oh, are we having like a Fight Club situation here?
I honestly, that would not surprise me at this point.
Like, okay, so the regular Trump that we're seeing is Tyler Durden, and this is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other guy.
Yeah, but which one's the most racist?
We got another deep throat, folks.
Yep.
Apparently.
It's fixing to get very interesting in the next couple of months.
Yeah, because the midterms, like I said, we're just about a little under a month away from the midterms, and stuff is going to go crazy.
Yep.
I fully expect everything just go completely off the rails by the time Halloween gets here.
Yeah, honestly, I'm a little bit worried because there's a climate right now in the States it's boiling over.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of worried that by the time November rolls around, whatever the result is, there's going to be violence.
Oh, I pretty much anticipate it.
Hmm.
Although, did you see the recent rally that Trump gave? I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of the people there looked bored.
Well, they kicked the guy out for...
Yeah, that one dude who was making like all the sarcastic faces behind him. They had to like take him out of the background and replace him with like another person. Yeah. That was funny. But
I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often of people trying to get into that crowd behind the Trump on the rallies.
I'm pretty sure they vet them like as thoroughly as they can.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah.
Is that why there's always, like, the token black guy?
Usually. Of course, they apparently couldn't even find them this time.
Where was this at?
This was in... God, I cannot... I think it was in Iowa.
Hmm.
Was it in Iowa?
Yeah,
I know it isn't in Texas, because he's supposed to go down there before the midterms to help, you know, rally for Ted Cruz, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, so... Asshole of the week. Exactly who you thought it was going to be. But now we have our hero of the week. And our hero of the week this week is none other than Jack Dorsey, head of Twitter. Why is he our hero of the week? Because this week he finally and permanently banned Alex Jones and InfoWars from Twitter.
Hey.
Wow.
Kind of a hollow victory, but a victory nonetheless.
Yep. Yeah, so they finally said due to abusive behavior that they finally kicked him off.
Yeah.
About a month after everybody else decided, no, we've had enough of him.
Yeah. I think it was like the thing that happened. It was what happened when he, I think, because those you don't know, he actually like confronted Marco Rubio. And yeah. Marco Rubio basically said, dude, don't touch me or I'm going to kick your ass. So.
Yeah. And if you can make anybody feel bad for Marco Rubio, you're not a good person.
Yeah. That's a low bar, dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's it. I mean, that's all the major social media he has been banned from. He's banned from there. He's banned from Facebook. They banned him from YouTube.
Spotify.
Spotify is gone. Disgust will no longer allow, you know, host comment sections for his material, for his content. Literally the only thing he's got left at this point is, like, the streaming he does from his own website.
Yeah. And his radio show.
So, basically, he's back to around, I don't know, like 2005.
He's basically the guy in his basement on his personal radio equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he makes most of his money from his, like, questionable vitamin supplements.
It's not questionable. Those things are definitely dodgy.
Yeah.
And I think John Oliver talks about him as being, like, chocolate flavored chicken bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and also some of them, you know, they go on and on about the whole soy boy bullshit. Which, first of all, if that was true, then wouldn't you think that it'd infect all of Southeast Asia?
Right. Yeah. Well, they're supposed to use a different type of soy in their stuff than we use in America.
Yeah, that's bullshit. A soybean is a soybean. But anyway, the point is, so they were trying to give out supplements that were supposed to take the place of soy, and guess what it also contains?
Soy. Of course.
I mean, like, I think they use, like, a fancy, like, chemical nomenclature, but it's soy.
So wait, are they some of the weirdos that are saying that soy is giving men boobs or something?
Yep. Estrogen. That's the story.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
The level of intellect you're dealing with.
Gotcha here. There. All right.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, but yeah, so he has been, I guess, contained for the moment.
You know, he's been deplatformed, that's for sure.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, and basically, like, Milo is like the other big figure who's been roundly deplatformed, though I think he says Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Where he just whines about how bad his life is now.
Yeah.
Because nobody listens to him.
Yeah, for the record, there's still douchebags like Mark Dice that you can still see on Facebook and Twitter, and he's just as bad as Alex Jones is. Just not quite as flamboyant or as, I hate to say it, influential.
Yeah.
As Alex Jones is, but he's just as bad.
Have you seen about the new Spider-Man, J. Jonah Jameson?
He no longer runs
the Daily Bugle.
Nope.
He essentially runs a conspiracy podcast out of his home. He's Alex Jones in the
That makes so much sense. It really does.
Yeah.
All right.
That's one of the reasons I can't wait to start the game.
Yeah.
Boy. Well, next up, starting the proper show proper, we unfortunately have to say goodbye to the iconic man of the screen of the 70s, 80s, and occasionally in the 90s, Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, one of the top mustaches in movie history. Yep.
Sexiest man alive on numerous publications several times.
Yep.
Smokey. Of Smokey and the Bandit.
He was Smokey and Smokey and the Bandit. He was one of the guys in Deliverance.
Yeah.
Not the one you're thinking.
No.
Cannonball Run.
And there's, like, Gator, which was, like, a sequel to another movie he did that he also directed.
Yeah.
It's really stupid, but it's one of those, like, it was one of those eras when a somewhat, you know, big shot actor could also write, direct their movies and actually put out gold. I mean, Sylvester Stallone did it several times.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I saw somebody tell a good story when, I forget what movie it was. He was running for a movie with some other big name actor. I can't believe I'm forgetting the stuff, but basically he got kicked off because they said his acting was terrible. The other guy said they didn't like his nose. And so they are talking in the parking lot as they're about to leave. He's like, well, I'm going to go take some acting classes. I don't know what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nose job.
Yeah. Oh, he was, yeah. Wasn't he also, like, he, I know in the 90s.
Gunsmoke.
Yeah, Gunsmoke. Yeah. Let's see. He was also in Striptease, I think was he was also in. Mm-hmm. He was also in Boogie Nights.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody, any guys ever see Boogie Nights before?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in that too. He was also, unfortunately, in the Dungeon Siege movie that Uwe Boll made.
Yep.
Oh, and he was also in Saints Row 3.
Yeah.
Playing himself.
He helped develop the game show Win, Lose, or Draw.
Yep.
Hmm.
So. Oh, the set was modeled after his living room.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. See, you're going to do the show, but it has to look like my living room. That's some rich guy stuff.
Yeah. In fact, yeah, I mentioned Deliverance earlier. Deliverance is actually the movie that made him famous.
Hmm.
Like, that's the movie that first made him, like, a leading actor. And, man, that's a hell of a movie to get known for. Because has any of you actually seen Deliverance? Like, I know you know of that one part, but have you ever actually seen the movie?
No.
For the record, it's actually a really good movie. It's just that it gets tainted with that one,
that scene.
Everybody knows. And that's not even, and of course, he's not even in that scene. That's Ned Beatty.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's unfortunate, but he was, I think he was 82.
Yeah.
He'd been in the pictures for a while before he became famous, but,
yeah,
you know, he was like the dude in the 70s and early 80s.
Yeah.
And Smokey and the Bandit, I mean, that movie still, God, that movie is so stupid, but it somehow still holds up.
Yeah, it's stupid, but it's also kind of endearing, and mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah. It's one of those essential sort of Americana type movies,
yeah.
Because it captures a place and time.
Yeah,
just don't show it to truck drivers because they will.
They hate it.
Yeah, sort of the idea of we gotta haul this Coors over state lines.
Yeah, yeah, that was back when like blue laws were a thing.
Yeah,
you know, a major
thing. Doesn't make sense now, but
yeah, but yeah, that movie came out like right around the time when truckers were like cool. Because it would have been like a couple years after like the big trucker strike, and so suddenly the idea of a trucker being an outlaws or something.
Did that Convoy song came out yet?
Yep, came out around the same time as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, was also made into a movie.
Yes, it was.
And it actually ain't that bad. But yeah. So R.I.P.
See him go.
Yeah. But he left a lot of great work behind him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
$20, I can get the 7 movie Smokey and the Bandit collection.
7.
Hell
yes,
yeah.
They made a bunch of sequels to that.
I just
have
franchise. The trilogy set for DVD.
Yeah,
that's more than enough.
See, there was believe it or not, there was a time in Hollywood when people made endless sequels to shit like that.
Yep.
Like Jaws.
So I think he's only in the first two.
Yeah.
And then Bandit is the lead in the third, and it's like, okay, this
Who
is
gives a crap?
Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, so we now have another. We have, I think, this is the first sentencing we've actually gotten in one of these trials. George Papadopoulos was sentenced to 14 days in jail for lying to the FBI.
Yep.
14 days.
14 days. Now, people have been sort of throwing around ideas on why the sentence was so low. Was it just like another example of how lightly white-collar crime is usually treated in the U.S.?
I think it's just more that he's the small fry in all of this.
It's also said that it's possible that it was a negotiated reduced sentence because he cooperated with the investigation and gave them some great information.
I was looking at the court documents, and they recommended like 0 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be...
So he's basically only going to be in the pen for like 2 weeks, and then he's out.
Yeah. And he's going to have...
He might actually get out even sooner for good behavior. So
yeah. 200 hours of community service and 12 months of supervised release.
Yeah.
This is a crazy question, but with this specific conviction, will he be allowed to vote?
Is lying to the FBI considered a felony or a misdemeanor?
Was this perjury or?
I think he's a felon.
It really depends on if it's a felony or a misdemeanor. If it's a felony, then yeah, he can no longer vote.
Yeah, I think he's a felon now. And I don't have it here, but if you look up the statements that his lawyer put out after this, basically admits he's a fool. He's an idiot. he was the small fry in all of this.
Yeah.
That definitely makes a lot of sense why they wouldn't necessarily go down super hard on this guy for kind of being the stooge, essentially.
He was like the sort of the middleman, and he's like, I got suckered into this, and I'm completely to blame. I can't make excuses. I'm stupid.
Yeah, like it's really stupid to lie to the FBI.
Yeah. Because they're gonna find out one way or another, dude. This ain't just Podunk County cops. This is the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that is officially the first sentencing we've got related to this entire investigation. And this, you know, this was specifically from Bob Mueller himself. So that's the first. Yeah. So I guess Manafort's. Yeah, I guess Manafort's going to be the next one. And I'm pretty sure Manafort has still not flipped. So. His sentencing will probably, well, actually, now that I think about it, the current stuff that he was tried for actually isn't even related to this. It's like securities fraud from the past, because apparently the dude's just a lifetime criminal.
Yep.
I guess upon leaving court after the sentencing, someone threw a Team Putin shirt at him.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Hmm.
All right, well, in other news, those you don't know, we're having another confirmation hearing for a new justice on the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh, and it's basically been a week-long shit show.
Yep.
Wow, where do we begin?
I think the big thing is that the White House has been withholding almost all of the papers related to his time.
Yeah, and the ones they did release, they didn't release until like the day before the first day of the confirmation hearing started.
Like tens of thousands of documents there.
So part of me actually does think that some of the people on the committee doing the confirmation are actually trying to stall for time.
That's basically been the Democrats' plan. You don't really know much about this guy.
Yeah,
you can't do a hearing.
You know what we do have is not particularly. Is troubling.
Yeah.
But it kind of just showed that, first of all, and it needs to be said, everything that you see here, more than likely everybody that's voting for the confirmation or not voting for the confirmation already has their decision ingrained. You know, so at this point, it's kind of mostly theater, you know, unless something exceptional comes about in those papers that they find.
Yeah.
But more than likely, he is probably going to be confirmed.
Because they only need 50.
Mm-hmm.
And that would get Pence involved.
Yeah.
He did some bad shit, even calling birth control abortion-inducing drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is just...
That's not how it works.
That is the exact motherfucking opposite of how it works. If he's getting this confused with an IUD, some people, if they go through a lot of mental fucking gymnastics, can think that it causes, but it does not.
Or...
It does not. It just keeps it keeps an egg from being implanted on the uterine yep. wall.
Or say like the morning after pill. Morning after pill is not an abortion pill. It just prevents a pregnancy.
Yep.
Can't yep. abort something that hasn't already started.
Exactly, because in all likelihood, if it was going to happen, the sperm hasn't even already infiltrated the egg at this point.
Yeah.
Fucking idiots. I'm sorry. It just pisses me off.
I realize, in the last few years, I've suddenly realized that, wow, men in America are very ignorant of the female anatomy.
Which is amazing because they're in such control of it legally.
I'm just all wrinkled because I went to the library, one of my favorite places, this great bastion of what I think should be democratic socialism. Mm-hmm. Where we share our resources, we pool them together.
All the information is available, right. Can be accessed by anybody in the community at any time.
So much knowledge, so many resources right there. What do I see? Defund Planned Parenting. Fuck your ass. Fuck you.
Yeah.
There was somebody, some rich guy was suggesting we should shut down libraries and have Amazon be in charge of them, essentially.
You know what? I don't have enough breath.
Sorry, that was...
Amazon would be a great steward of this stuff.
I'm so done with this backwards bullshit war on women. You know, okay, defund Planned Parenting and sentence millions of young women to death by cervical cancer.
Yeah, most people tend to forget that of everything that Planned Parenthood does, about 2% of it is dedicated specifically to aborting pregnancy.
Yeah. It's
everything
really
else is you know, sexual education, free pap smears, and cancer checks for men and women, by the way. Men can have services they can get from Planned Parenthood as well.
STD checks, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's where you go when you're a young college student and you don't, well, it's different now because we can get insurance now. Thank you, Obama. Actually, that is a real thank you. Thanks, Obama. But it's where you go before those days when you have a really bad sinus infection and you're going to fucking die without some medicine. And you don't have any money and you say, can I get a pap smear? And by the way, this is also going on. Can you fix me up? And they will. Or they used to. Yeah. It's people have a lot of fucking weird ass notions about things they don't know anything about. And that's the part that really bothers me the most is when they
start. And you know what the worst part about all of it is? Like what's really bad about all of it that is just the most infuriating aspect of just the whole debate is that the whole debate, the people who actually started the whole debate really didn't give a crap about abortion to begin with. It was a political move.
Yep.
Because what had happened is after so everybody knows that, you know, the Roe v. Wade decision was 1974, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And for those you don't know, originally when that came out, there wasn't really much of a response from most people. The Southern Baptist Convention, of all people, were like, yeah, this is cool. It's furthering human rights, equality, et cetera, had it in their official newsletter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then?
Well, what happened was that a couple years before Roe v. Wade, there was another court case, and this one had to do with the racial segregation of private religious universities. Specifically, Bob Jones University. And basically the original, like, view, like the whole what we call the religious right, it wasn't born from Roe v. Wade. It was born from that case. And what happened is this guy named Paul Weyrich teamed up with these guys, with, amongst other people, Jerry Falwell, who a lot of people probably don't remember him, and that's a good thing, because we sure do. And once they had figured out that because of the Bob Jones case, they had managed to get they had found a sort of area of, I guess, virgin timber, if you will, of new voters, because at that point, most Christians and what we call Christian conservatives had actively protested against getting involved in politics because they thought it was a dirty, sinful business. And then they discovered they had a new crop of voters. They needed another issue in order to, you know, keep this movement going, keep the momentum going. And they had a conference call, and one voice popped up and said, "Why don't we use abortion?"
Yeah.
And that's how it started.
Yeah.
It was a naked, cynical political maneuver. And that is the reason why, if you go to a Planned Parenthood clinic in certain states, they have to read you off this list of bullshit side effects that don't actually happen when you have an abortion. So
no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole crazy thing is that their objection to things like abortion, you know, sex out of marriage, all that sort of stuff, like, you could prevent, like, abortions to a big degree if birth control were easy to get.
Easy to access.
Yeah.
You know, like, a lot of high schools, you know, like, a lot of high schools, they started installing, like, condom machines and stuff.
Yeah.
But then they also got ticked off because, you know, you're promoting promiscuity and...
I'm sorry, but people have been fucking forever.
Yeah, haven't you read your holy book?
Right, and you know, comparing my experience and my friend's experience, hardly any of my age peers that I know of have had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
But the generation above me, many of them had abortions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not just one, and I'm absolutely positive it's because they did not have reliable access to birth control, and they were still being preached at, you know, abstinence only.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not working for them. And to counter that, you know, they were there saying, "Hey, girls, here's birth control. Use it. Do you need it? We will get it for you."
Yeah.
Because of the experiences that they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like sex,
why they started, you know, getting, you know, their 13-year-old girl, you know, their girls, you know, starting getting them on the pill as soon as they turn 13. So,
yeah. And like, sex education is also a big problem because there's no consistency in many states. Like, imagine down in the South, Alabama and such are very famous for doing abstinence only.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, talk about it. Yeah, now fortunately, I live in Georgia, and Georgia, because the Georgia is the home of the CDC, we actually, in spite of protestations, we do have a pretty thorough sex education program. I had a pretty thorough sex education program when I was a teenager. So, yeah. You know, but yeah, through most of the South, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Texas, Kentucky.
Not gonna get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not a lot. Yeah.
But
when your only way of learning about it is just porn on the internet, it's makes it really easy for kids to not know anything about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was. Do you guys know how very, very lucky you were to have Adam and Dr. Drew? I mean.
Yeah.
Seriously.
They were great. We didn't have them growing up. We had asshole teachers who started out every fucking biology class with the same saying, "You get AIDS, you die." You know what? You're an asshole.
It's like that part from, what was it, Mean Girls? He's like, "Don't have sex, because if you get seconds, you will get pregnant and die."
I'm not sure how that works, but okay.
Right.
I think the only weird thing I had is a teacher who, a health class teacher that was a little bit too into Elvis. She had like a... I guess it wasn't really a purse, more of a bag that had Elvis's face on it. And anytime students talk shit about it, she was very mad. It's like, okay.
So did you guys get, like, the cucumber or the banana with the condom?
Oh,
I think we had lot of like illustrative stuff.
Yeah, we didn't get that either. We had to do the illustration stuff.
Yeah, you know,
what would have been really great is if, in hindsight, if they had taken the banana, not the banana, taken the condom, blown it up, and put it over their head, so you could visually say, "Look, girls, if he says he's too big for a condom, he's full of dog shit."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that won't work. It'd have to be a woman who would have to do that because they segregate sex education down here by sex. Yeah. So
it was when I was.
Actually, because we're on the subject, and I promise we're going to move on, but Phil, you're Canadian. How did they do sex education up there?
Well, we actually had, a pretty decent sex education course.
When did they start doing it?
It started
like grade
first. Yeah, it would be grade 7 here.
That's actually a little later than that. We had it. I got my first education when it was in 6th grade.
Really? So,
yeah.
I was in Kentucky. Those mofos didn't do anything until freshman year of high school.
Yeah.
And some girls were already knocked up before then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Georgia is home of the CDC. So
yeah.
But
anyway.
I think 8th grade.
Yeah, I have a friend in Germany, and you know, who's another friend from the Netherlands, and they start doing their sex education in like elementary school.
Yeah, Jacob had his first one in 5th grade last year, and it was co-ed.
Yeah, but wasn't it like the basics though?
It was pretty basic. They didn't talk about masturbation, but I immediately got a question about that right after the boys talked amongst themselves. But I don't think they figured out how to. I don't want to know.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Anyway.
His generation's gonna His generation's gonna be pretty unique because they're gonna be, as far as this stuff is concerned, they're gonna be pretty advanced for their age.
They are.
Than we were when we were their age. Too. Yeah, right? They'll have the internet too. So
they don't Plus have the thing we had is just parents like. You know, like we are, they're going to have other kids who have hippie-ass parents like us who admit that humans have sex for fun because it feels good.
Yeah.
This is shit that nobody would have ever told us when we were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, kids, having sex is kind of like riding a motorcycle. It's really fun, but you need to wear a helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you fuck it up, it goes real bad.
Very badly, very quickly.
Yeah.
Don't ride the wrong motorcycle, people.
Also, make sure that that motorcycle is stable enough for you to ride, because it's nothing like sticking your dick in crazy.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
But yeah, I mean, I'll think about like those people who are like on city councils or like PTA committees, and they'll have like parents who are like, you know, saying the sex education our kids are getting are too explicit, not in line with my Christian values. And they'll ask, like, ma'am, does your son by any chance have a smartphone? Yeah. How old is he? He's 15. Ma'am, he's probably watching video of a woman blowing a donkey right about now. So
everybody loves the donkey show.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on from there, because we
that
went
was a
on
a long segue. Wasn't it?
It was a tangent, but it was one that needs to be had every so often.
Yeah. Just go watch Clerks too.
Yeah. Exactly. So I already briefly mentioned this, but I'll go ahead and mention it again. Before Alex Jones had his ass kicked off of Twitter, he had a run-in with Senator Marco Rubio while he was doing an impromptu press conference or whatever. And as you can imagine, Rubio finally got sick of his shit, turned around and said, don't touch me. I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't actually phrase it that way, but
yeah,
he
said, hey, don't touch me again, man. I'm asking you not to touch me again.
Yeah.
Jones said, well, sure, I just patted you nicely. He said, I don't know who you are. You're not going to get arrested, man. You're not going to get arrested. I'll take care of it myself.
Yeah.
Jones replied, oh, you beat me up? Look at him. He's so mad. You're not going to silence me. You're not going to silence America. You are a little gangster thug. Rubio just threatened to physically take care of me.
Has this man ever been decked before? Like, just has anyone ever finally gotten sick of his shit that they just turned around and punched him in his fat face?
Either never or not
Not recent enough. Like the most recent I can think of anything close to that is when he and the InfoWars people invaded the Young Turk set at the RNC and Jimmy Dore spit water in his face.
Yeah.
That was awesome, by the way. I need to watch that video again.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so I guess there's a hearing in the Senate about foreign influence on social media platforms.
Yeah, that's what was happening, because like all the people from like Facebook and
Twitter,
Google and those people were like answering questions then.
Actually, Google wasn't there.
Oh, Google wasn't.
They sent an empty chair.
Oh.
Not kidding.
Yeah, I know. They were there in spirit.
In the FU spirit.
But So, who here is taking bets on how long it's going to be before, you know, fucking Jones ends up climbing the clock tower with a sniper rifle?
I hadn't thought of that before, but, you know, you may be onto something.
Hmm.
I mean, if his, to be honest, if his attorney is to believe he is a complete charlatan.
Yeah.
But if his ex-wife is to be believed, he's kind of in between that point where he might be a charlatan, but he's been a charlatan for so long that he actually has started to believe in his own bullshit.
Yeah.
The L. Ron Hubbard effect.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. And the dude apparently is like seriously paranoid schizophrenic or something.
Yeah.
So it may be a mixture of the two.
Well, he's like, clearly not stable.
Like, where does the real Alex Jones end and the charlatan begin? Like, it's impossible to tell now.
I don't think his family can tell anymore.
Mm.
So, yeah. Sooner or later, he's going to run into the wrong person. Let's just put it that way.
Either that, or he's going to, like, drive a car into a Wendy's or something, and that's going to be it. They're going to throw his ass either in the penitentiary or in the psych ward. One of those two.
Hmm.
Anyway, all right, so next story after that, guess who had a big speech in Illinois today?
Oh, God.
Former President Obama.
Oh.
He basically had a big speech, and he freaking unloaded on Trump and the GOP.
Yep.
Like, I mean, there's...
It wasn't even subtle. It was just flat out.
Yeah.
Owned.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you would wish somebody had said it as clearly as he did.
Yep.
Apparently it took the courage of a former president to actually have the balls to do it.
Yeah, he was talking about just sort of the ridiculous stuff that is going on that should be enough of a reason for people to go out and vote. Same things like, it should not be a partisan issue to say that we do not pressure the Attorney General or the FBI to use the criminal justice system as a cudgel to punish our political opponents. Or to explicitly call on the Attorney General to protect members of our own party from prosecution because an election happens to be coming up. Yeah, let's see what else. Talking about Trump. Honestly, it did not start with Donald Trump. He is a symptom, not the cause. Mm-hmm. He's just capitalizing on resentments that politicians have been fanning for years.
I think a lot of people forget, because I sometimes forget that there's like a whole generation now that grew up without living under George W. Bush.
And if you
think about it, a lot of what Trump is doing is actually very similar to the type of stuff that the Bush administration was pulling. It's just they're not nearly as subtle about it.
Yeah, these people have been worshiping Reagan for the past 30 years.
Yeah, like, you guys remember, like, we talk about fake news now. You know what, like, what from 2000 to 2008, what fake news was? It wasn't called fake news. What was it called? The liberal media.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else did he say? He's talking about the anonymous op-ed. They're not doing us a service by actively promoting 90% of the crazy stuff that's coming out of this White House. Don't worry, we're preventing the other 10%. There's actually only one real check on bad policy and abuses of power, and that's you, you and your vote.
Yeah.
I talked about, Trump's, Trump mocked Obama's speech for supporters in North Dakota. Oh, this is from Trump's speech in North Dakota. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I watched it, but I fell asleep. I found he's very good for sleeping.
Yeah.
Stupid asshole.
Yeah, mm-hmm. See.
Sorry.
Later, as he made his pitch for Republican candidates, Trump's older supporters, isn't this much more exciting than listening to President Obama's speech? And telling them if that doesn't get out to vote for the midterms, nothing will. Yeah, and that's essentially set up for Republicans to denounce these remarks. Lindsey Graham said that the more President Barack Obama speaks about the good old years of his presidency, the more likely President at real Donald Trump is to get elected. In fact, the best explanation of President Trump's victory are the results of the Obama presidency. No, it was fear of a woman, a competent woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Well, granted, a competent woman who did have a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
But some of it a lot deserved, of but...
made up as well over 30 years of bullshit.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, usually, that's the thing, because they would always bring up the issues, like, the issues that weren't really issues. You know, the Benghazi shit, her emails. But they wouldn't bring up the stuff you actually should be concerned about, like how the Clinton Foundation handled Haiti, or how her and Bill basically kept black slave labor in the governor's mansion when he was governor of Arkansas.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
No, it's the Uranium One stuff, which didn't even involve her at all. But yeah, let's see. He has some more stuff just about the – talked about how the GOP is – cozying up to Putin and Russia. What happened to the Republican Party. It's definitely worth pulling up video of
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Reagan and Nixon before him. That's what happened to the Republican Party. That's your answer.
Yeah. Definitely worth pulling up some video of this because he's got a lot to say.
Yeah. It was on our news channel. Even we were covering it here in Canada.
Yeah, because here's the thing. People actually like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a reasonable person that's considered the things he was going to do.
Yeah, he was the first president we Americans had had in a long time that was like a genuine phenomenon outside of the United States. He'd go to a foreign country and thousands of people would come to hear him speak. Yeah.
Considerate of other people.
Let's not delude ourselves, though. It wasn't all peaches and cream.
Exactly.
Oh, we know it wasn't. I mean, he was basically the carpet bombing fanatic as far as drones were concerned. But...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chelsea Manning happened under his watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Of course, he also is the person that let Chelsea Manning also go, but then again, he kind of caused that whole thing.
Put him
himself.
In
the
first place. So, anyway.
So if you get a chance, watch that speech. It's definitely worth watching. He still got it.
Yep.
I mean, there are few people as eloquent as he is in modern politics.
Did you see him at McCain's funeral?
Yep.
Talking about how the greatest joke that McCain could pull is having Bush and him saying nice things about him at his funeral.
Yeah.
He got a big laugh out of that one too.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So next up, probably the king of investigative journalism in America, Bob Woodward. Basically became famous for the work he did with Watergate.
Yep.
He's one of the great political commentators and journalists of his generation in this era. Yep. He's got a book coming up about the Trump presidency. It's called Fear.
Yep.
Yep.
And this is one guy that you cannot question at all about his motives.
No. Or his credibility, because he is known for making sure he keeps the receipts.
Yep.
Yeah.
He keeps reams and reams of paperwork and evidence for his sources when he does one of these.
Yeah.
And
did about hundreds of interviews as well as had a variety of documents sort of backing this stuff up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which basically means that whatever you read in the book, there's a 99.9% chance that it's factual.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which then, obviously, the White House said it's all fabricated stories.
Yep.
Well,
Trump's been on Trump.
Trump did.
Yeah, Trump went on a tirade saying this is a book. It's selling badly. By the way, it hasn't actually been released yet.
Sorry. I just love his delusions. He's just, he's so fucking out there selling badly.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Sorry.
But basically, you remember all the stuff that they talked about in Fire and Fury, like several months ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He kind of just sort of, basically just sort of confirms your worst suspicions.
Yeah.
Only I think in this case he actually does bring the Russia investigation into it, because Fire and Fury barely touched on Russia at all. Probably because, you know, that stuff, he wasn't in the room when that stuff was going down, I guess. But
yeah,
no, Bob Woodward sure as hell was, or at least he's talked to people who were. I have a feeling we're going to read this thing and there's going to be some shit that's going to come about out of it we didn't even know.
And like, they put out some highlights.
Yeah. So, like, what are some of those highlights, Chris?
Let's see. He talked about the national security team. They've been shaken by his lack of curiosity and knowledge about world affairs, his contempt for the mainstream view of military and intelligence leaders. After a January National Security Council meeting in which North Korea was discussed, Jim Mattis told close associates of the president acted like and had the understanding of a fifth or sixth grader.
Yeah, that is being far too generous.
Yeah. I agree.
See, this one's about John.
He's a toddler at best.
This one's about John Kelly. Told colleagues that he thought the president was, quote, unhinged. In one meeting, Kelly said of Trump, he's an idiot. It's pointless to try to convince him of anything. He's gone off the rails. We're in crazy town. I don't even know why any of us are here. This is the worst job I've ever had.
Damn.
Yeah.
I'm getting
this book when it comes out.
Yeah. Let's see.
I think this book's going to be an international bestseller when it comes out.
I think it's already pre-sold really well.
Yeah.
Probably one of their best books ever. Reince Priebus, obviously the chief of staff before John Kelly, called the presidential bedroom, quote, the devil's workshop, because that's where Trump watched cable news and tweeted. Trump compared Priebus to a little rat. He just scurries around.
Yeah. See, that part we already kind of were able to figure out more or less by trial and error when people started to realize that his tweets tended to correlate with what, you know, they were talking about on Fox and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, Trump often mocked his former national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, puffing his chest and exaggerating his breathing. He also said McMaster dressed in cheap suits, quote, like a beer salesman.
You know what? Beer salesmen are fine people. Fuck him.
Yeah.
Also, you look like a Cheeto, so...
Yeah.
He looks like if an Oompa Loompa managed to grow a couple of sizes and then became a used car salesman.
Let's see. Trump was vicious in his remarks about Jeff Sessions, saying at 1.28, this guy is mentally retarded. He's this dumb southerner. He couldn't even be a one-person country lawyer down in Alabama.
Wow.
Which then he said he had never used the R word. It's like people pulled up evidence of him saying things like that back in like the early 2000s.
On like the Howard Stern show and on, you know, freaking, what was it? Amos and Andy or whatever.
Yeah.
But,
let's see, talking about Mattis. Trump saying he wanted to assassinate the Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad after the chemical attack in April 2017. Let's kill the expletive lot of them. Mattis hung up and told a senior aide, we're not going to do any of that. We're going to be much more measured. Let's see. Gary Cohn, the former economic advisor, came to view Trump as a professional liar and threatened to quit over how Trump handled a deadly white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. Let's see. I would have taken that resignation letter and shoved it up his ass six different times. Yeah. There's a few more here. People should just read them on their own, but
yeah, it's and this is just the choice pits. We once the actual complete book goes out, there's probably going to be some choice pieces in there they haven't revealed yet.
I think there's one bit here with his lawyer or John Dowd, saying basically he's not going to let him talk to Mueller because otherwise he's going to be wearing orange.
Yeah.
They said, don't testify. It's either that or an orange jumpsuit.
Yeah. President Trump's the kind of guy who, you know, would try to make a tuna sandwich and then would end up in the burn unit with mayonnaise in his hair.
Yeah. Just to give you a good idea of when this happened, you said that Trump insisted he would be, quote, a really good witness. You are not a good witness, Dowd said. He resigned the next morning. Yeah. That was when he sort of just quit in a rage.
He's like, I'm in a losing battle. I'm out.
This guy's not listening to me at all.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, anyways.
Wow. Yeah,
stay tuned for that book. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Yeah, as soon as it goes out, somebody's got to send me a PDF. Because, there's going to be so much good stuff in there. But, anyway. All right. So, next up. Nike. They have started the 30th anniversary of their famous Just Do It campaign, one of the most famous ad campaigns in history, and it features none other than Colin Kaepernick.
Yep.
And it worked. Their sales jumped up 31% after this campaign started.
Yep, and angered so many racist.
Really stupid people. One guy accidentally burned his house down. Trying to burn his sneakers. Yeah, guy burned patches of his lawn.
Yep. You're kidding.
Darwin.
Yeah, people were just throwing their shoes on the lawn and setting them on fire.
Yeah. It's like, okay. I'm boycotting Nike. I'm like, you know they've already got your money, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's not how a boycott works.
And also, Kaepernick's been on Nike's payroll since 2011.
Yep.
Yeah.
You've been supporting
him this whole time. You just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ad campaign, unsurprisingly, aired during the first game of the NFL season.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good ad. If you want to watch it, it doesn't just feature Colin Kaepernick. He actually does the narration of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But also features LeBron James, Serena Williams, a bunch of athletes who have overcome obstacles, both physical and mental.
Mm-hmm.
They feature Shaquille Griffin, who has was born with a disfigured left arm, so which had to be amputated, so he has a kind of a stump on his left arm.
Mm-hmm.
But plays, he's now in the NFL,
mm-hmm.
actually getting a start in his first game. So he basically plays one armed.
Mm-hmm. There was that this commercial also had that that girl who was not only the high school beauty queen but was also the star quarterback for their football team.
Yeah,
that's right. Intergender football is now a thing in high school sports.
Yeah,
so
there's a bit where like Nike shares went down on Tuesday, but then ended up closing at a positive.
Yep.
So even when people jumped on it, oh, see, their shares are going down, they're losing money. It's like nope,
it jumped right back up the day after.
Yeah. obviously incited all the people that still think, for obvious reasons, that, you know, the whole kneeling thing was about the national anthem, which it was not.
Yeah. It also inspired a bunch of former or at-duty soldiers and military to post pictures of them wearing their Nike-made army boots on Twitter.
Yeah.
Those you don't know, but Nike also manufactures stuff for the United States military.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nike's also the chief maker of the uniforms and such.
Yep.
For the NFL. They're,
they also use third world slave labor. We also kind of need to mention that too.
I found that hilarious that the people that were in favor of the boycott were like, oh yeah, they use child labor and all that. It's like, and you
didn't care until this happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't get to pull that out as like a moral thing when you own their stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a factor at all in any of your decisions.
Nope.
And that also doesn't preclude them from actually doing good marketing of positive social impact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially when I'm pretty sure they were well aware of the reaction they were going to get.
Yeah, and it's like any big corporation does really bad things. That doesn't preclude them from doing good things with their either brand or their money or anything like that.
Yeah. Got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, hey, there's at least one company that's standing up for this social messaging that's calling. Yeah. And
well, let's make it completely clear why Nike is doing this. Nike did enough research where they found out where their customer base was, and they knew this was going to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
why they were willing to do it. It's purely a marketing move on their part.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't suddenly get a conscience or anything. They just realized that
there was money to be made.
But it did also help. So there is that.
Like, it's out there as far as, like, oh, this big company says this is something that's good.
Yeah. Just more remember, socially conscious capitalism is still capitalism. Yeah. But anyway.
I'm not saying anything is morally right or anything.
No. Yeah. All right. And this is going to be our last serious story for the night. Levi Strauss, you know, famous denim manufacturer, blue jeans and stuff. They're teaming up with a gun control group to launch new initiatives.
Yep. So, yeah, their CEO wrote up a piece in Fortune this week saying basically that they, quote, simply cannot stand by silently when it comes to issues that threaten the very fabric of the communities where we live and work.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying they are working with, let's see, what is the company here? Every Town for Gun Safety. They are going to be donating more than $1 million over the next 4 years to nonprofits and youth activists that work to end gun violence, establishing the Safer Tomorrow Fund.
Mm-hmm.
They're working with the Every Town for Gun Safety Gun Control Group to form the Every Town Business Leaders for Gun Safety Group with other executives.
Mm-hmm.
See, Levi's will also double all donations made by their employees to the Safer Tomorrow Fund. And
I hear a cat.
Sorry, that's Sushi.
He's in support of gun control as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, sort of the same way. It's like this is also part marketing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they are definitely taking a stand, especially as a company that doesn't really deal with guns as part of their business.
Apart from maybe some people that use guns might wear jeans.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a stretch.
Yeah. And obviously they also had to note that they're not advocating to repeal the Second Amendment nor calling gun owners irresponsible. But
except for the ones that are.
Yeah. Basically saying we can't insulate ourselves from every threat. So we can't harden every place we gather, whether it be our schools, workplaces, shops, churches, or entertainment venues. But we can't take common sense, measurable steps like criminal background checks on all gun sales that will save lives.
Yep. Good.
Sounds good to me. All right.
Yep. Yeah.
And now for the unserious part of the show. Just sort of, it's like...
Some of it is kind of serious, but...
Yeah. So,
What are you talking about? You're saying this isn't serious.
All right, so way over in Kuwait, there was a fish shop that was shut down by the government because they were trying to make their fish look fresher than it was. How did they do this? They would attach googly eyes to them.
Yep, people noticed this. It was all over social media. They had to get shut down.
It's like not even subtle.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I believe, like, fresh fish has eyes that are clear. These ones are yellow. And they do not look great.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Okay, googly-eyed fish. That's a new one for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was fun.
Yay, Kuwait.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah.
If you get your fish and the eyes are shaking around, you probably should double check.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You might not want to eat that afterwards.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you are, you might want to, you know, chuck it in the deep fryer first.
Yeah. be prompted.
Comes out nice and rubbery. Because, hey, it may you may end up breaking your teeth, but at least there won't be any bacteria in there.
Nope.
Anyway, so next story. Over in Texas, there's a McDonald's, and there was a group of friends. Okay, so I need to sort of, because I'm not sure if this is true for, like, all the states or outside of the United States. McDonald's, a lot of McDonald's, and actually a lot of fast food places in general, they've started doing this thing where they'll put up these sort of slice of life posters of, like, you know, they're obviously like fake, like fashion catalog bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just casually walk
Sears
around.
Catalog bullshit, you know, yeah. And, yeah. You know, put up there, like maybe they're eating or they're hanging out with their friends somewhere. Well, a group of friends in a McDonald's, did this in Texas. They decided to take like a big picture of themselves, you know, a stage picture, and then they put it up on the on what was at point it was like a bare wall.
Yeah.
And they put it up there, and they was like, I wonder how long this will stay there until somebody takes it down. Come a month later, and the poster was still on the wall.
Yeah,
because nobody looks.
Yeah, I think at the point that they sort of followed up on this was 51 days had been up there.
It had been up there for like 2.5 months, basically.
Yeah.
Well, almost so, 2 months. Actually, yeah. A month and a half. I can't do math good.
Yep. Yeah, so this is two friends that are Filipino-Americans said that we looked around and we saw there were no Asians in the posters around McDonald's, so we decided to do it ourselves. And I guess the rest is history.
Yep.
Yeah, so this is at the McDonald's at 2803 Business Center Drive. Mm-hmm. Where in Texas is this? Houston, yeah. I think. They saw a blank wall in June and decided it was the perfect place to put up a picture of themselves. So yeah, after they got the idea for this, they went to work. They held a photo shoot using a timer to take a picture of the two of them eating McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
They documented the entire process on YouTube, so they got a video up for that. The video even shows how they edited the picture to look like the others in the store. That's why we created the circles. We tried to get the same color palette and tried to make the printing really good as well. They mm-hmm. split $80 to buy the poster from Office Depot. And once it arrived, they took steps to buy a McDonald's uniform. Mm-hmm. I went to Goodwill and they had one for $7. So they went in on July 13th, put it up. And I believe it's not mentioned here. I believe they essentially had some people like keep the employees busy while the others went and put it up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so the McDonald's franchisee specifically involved in this actually put out a statement. We take pride in highlighting diversity in every aspect of our restaurants. We applaud these students' creativity and hope to see them in our restaurants again soon. So I assume they don't have any plans of taking it down or anything. Like, there's no animosity.
Yeah.
No, I don't see why they would.
Well, yeah. This
I don't see why they would, because it's like...
They say that there's no bad publicity. This is good publicity.
I assume. You know?
Yeah, this is good for the store. Yeah. It's the great part about this is that it is so subtle, you wouldn't have even... If you didn't know to look for it,
mm-hmm.
you just it's a background decoration. You wouldn't have seen it.
And isn't it great, too, that we have these wonderful little pocket cameras and we can do this? We have the technology to do this. This is unheard of 30 years ago. There would be no way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And
this is unheard of 10 years ago.
Probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I assume McDonald's reached out to them and sent them gift cards and such.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right, next story is kind of sad. Over in Brazil, you know, they have their national museum that has been there for 200 years until this week when it went up in flames and pretty much torched everything inside of it.
Yep. Yeah, it went up in so one of the things they found that actually survived this was a 11,600 pound meteorite.
Well, yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
A big giant space rock. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they lost a ton of stuff, which I hope gets to people running other important museums to do everything they can to document everything that's in their museums mm-hmm. and keep that off site.
Yeah.
Also fire suppression.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, there's one in California that has some really ridiculous stuff they had to do for some extreme fire suppressant measures that cost like $700 million.
Mm.
It's like having special tanks of water in storage for the sprinklers and such, as well as like trying to build everything out of fire suppressant materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they say what caused it?
Well, considering the fact that Brazil's been going through like a serious economic crisis over the last 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised if it was just like old wiring or something.
Yeah, I want to say it's something to do with it not being a building that's kept up to code all that well.
Yeah, that was a 200-year-old building.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it's not been modernized as much as it should have.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. That's sad.
It is. Yeah, it is, but it is what it is.
Yep.
But
next story is not quite as sad.
No, it's not.
Strange, somewhat bizarre.
Yeah, because why?
Depending on your thoughts, this could be good or bad.
Yeah. There's a museum in Philadelphia specifically dedicated to exhibits about insects and arachnids. Basically stuff that, you know, you don't want entering your house.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. And this week, those folks at that museum discovered that about 7,000... is that 7,000, like, a number of what was taken or the actual, like, monetary value?
Oh, that's how many?
They stole 7,000 insects, arachnids, and lizards. And apparently, it was an inside job.
So yep. These are dead ones on boards?
No.
Nope.
No.
No, live.
I think the total amount they estimate this stuff being is about $50,000.
Good God.
Let's see. Giant African mantises, bumblebee millipedes, warty glow spot roach. I assume you should not Google any of these names.
No, probably not.
Tarantulas, dwarf and tiger hissers, and leopard geckos. And there was especially a spider that is one of the world's most venomous spiders.
Oh, that's and nice.
Is among them.
Hey.
Wonderful.
The sand spider.
So if those were stolen, the question that I have is, for what?
Black ransom? Market?
I think essentially the museum has been resorting to just begging them to just bring it back.
Yeah,
because these are not creatures that could easily be replaced.
Yeah.
No, I don't think the inside employees would give a fuck about that. Yeah. Especially if there are outside sources where they can, you know, just basically flip this.
Yeah,
and get
some interesting money. Things here. See, it's hard to imagine what situation the creatures are in now, especially considering the rather morbid calling card the thieves left behind. Staff members showed up at the insectarium the next day. They found a couple of staff uniforms pinned to the wall with knives.
This is a crazy person job.
Yeah, they say they know exactly who did this. They snuck out the back with all these boxes. We caught them on camera. They took all the stuff, and then they didn't show up for their shifts. But the bugs may yet have their revenge. According to the Times, some of them were part of a federal investigation. When caught, the thieves will face not only theft charges, but also tampering with a federal investigation.
Oof.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's okay.
Enough, a whole lot more they could chew.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Is your, is your occult satanic ritual ingredients worth it?
Yeah.
Because that's probably what they were going for.
Yeah, or they tried to sell them at, like, some stupid new age shop.
Mm-hmm.
One of those, but
there's a lot of weird woo going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is. All right. Well, so next up, this one you kind of have to explain to me, Chris. But basically, there was a romantic comedy from Netflix that spiked in interest after it was featured in...
I forgot to put the... Interest in Yakult.
Oh.
You know what that is?
It's like
a yogurt drink.
Oh!
Yeah, so this involves the Netflix film To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the little sister that is drinking this as the fake boyfriend is showing up to give him a ride to school.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees this thing, asks her about it, and he's like, oh, this is Yakult. Mm-hmm. It's like yogurt drink. He tastes like, holy shit. If you keep bringing these, I'll give you a ride every day. And I guess people are like, oh, shit, we should fucking get this stuff. I guess it's kind of a probiotic drink as well. Created in Japan, but in the movie it's kind of presented as like a Korean thing.
Japan, Korea. Yeah. What's the difference?
But, Korean yogurt.
Quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, they've had places that sell this stuff, obviously not expecting any sort of spike in interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of just start running out.
Wow.
So now that's, that's going to be an import item soon.
Yeah.
Mm.
It was invented by the Japanese scientist Minoru Shirota when in 1930 managed to isolate and grow a strain of bacteria that could survive in the intestines. Named it Lactobacillus casei Shirota. And 5 years later, the first bottle of Yakult from Jihurto yogurt in Esperanto was produced and sold in Japan and Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Spread to Brazil, Australia, UK 96, US 99, initially through Asian and Hispanic markets.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I wonder if I can find some of this. See, it worked.
Yeah.
See, it totally worked.
Wow. Yeah, that's like every so often one of those like really obscure products will suddenly just explode in popularity over here. Like that's what actually happened to Sriracha, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just all of a sudden people started buying it.
Yeah. Okay. Just go to YakultUSA.com.
Yeah.
The site for a company that makes this stuff.
Yeah, and all right, so penultimate story for the night. We now know who's going to be playing Geralt of Rivia in Netflix's upcoming The Witcher series. It's Henry Cavill.
Oh.
Yep. There is going to be so much nudity in that show.
Yeah.
And probably some violence. Quite a lot of that, too.
He's going to need to become much more pale.
Yeah, and... Yeah, he's basically going to have to become an albino, basically.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Makeup!
It's like wearing 50 pounds, well, not 50 pounds, but at least, you know, a couple pounds of makeup just to, just to change his skin color.
Yeah, so it seems it's going to be an 8-episode series.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The showrunner worked on Netflix's Daredevil, The Defenders, and Umbrella Academy.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And executive producer, the director worked on House of Cards and Game of Thrones. He's going to direct four of the episodes, including the pilot.
All right.
And the other directors, let's see, worked on Luke Cage, Daredevil, HBO's Utopia, and AMC's Fear the Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
The other one worked on Starz Outlander and Counterpart.
Mm.
There's some good talent there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hope that they actually make something decent out of The Witcher.
I mean, there's been plenty of decent things made out of The Witcher, but there's also been some garbage made out of The Witcher.
Yeah.
There was that Polish TV show, for example.
Ugh. Yeah, that didn't go so well.
No. I assume he'll not have a mustache for this role.
No.
Or a beard.
Better not.
He can have either one, but yeah, he probably will not have one. But yeah, expect a lot of blood and a lot of sex, because that's pretty much the Witcher's bread and butter.
Yeah.
Take it to somebody who has played all three of the Witcher game and has read most of the Witcher books. That is...
Yeah.
There you go. That's but
and given the trends in modern TV, there will probably also be a lot of profanity as well.
Oh yeah,
because that's what happens in modern TV for some reason.
Yeah. And finally, our last story for the night. There's going to be a new Law and Order series, and it's going to be centered around hate crimes.
Yep. Law and Order Hate Crimes Unit.
Yep.
Timely?
Or Law and Order Hate Crimes.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them. They have spiked in recent years.
Yeah.
Initial order for 13 episodes, but yeah. It's... Hopefully this is a little less ridiculous than the normal Law and Order stuff, like SVU especially.
I doubt it. You remember, this is Law and Order we're talking about. Their whole...
I've seen that stuff on during work, and there's some weird shit to see when you're at work. Like gang rape.
That's SVU. And all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, this is a really heartwarming show to have on when you're taking a break.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, so do you know how many seasons the Law & Order franchise contains?
20.
Far too many.
52 seasons.
Woo!
Not including true crime or conviction.
That's across all of their
shows, though. And it's more than 1,100 episodes.
Lots of stuff to binge watch.
It's very much a definition of trash TV.
Yep. It is.
No, I could tell you what trash TV is. Say Yes to the Dress, which my mom watches every day.
Or one of those house flipping shows.
Oh, God.
Yeah that's all trash TV, too.
Or house renovating shows.
The thing that runs on
marathons. Or anything involving the Kardashians.
Well, we're going to have to take out a wall here and make a great room. Oh, God.
So, I
do believe we got a show, folks.
A substantive.
So, I would like to remind all of our listeners that if you got a question, a comment, something you want us to read on the air, or you just want to send us in your insane conspiracy theory about how the lizard people are trying to control the world's finance by screwing with national debt, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of unprovoked, mostly recorded and unwritten chicanery. Yeah, I'm trying to make up new words as I go along. On Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, Archive.org, basically anywhere where delicious, creamy podcasts like ours can be downloaded and heard and devoured with your ear mouths. For Let's Weekend, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Analfo, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi, say good night.